right. I'm going to start with a question, and it's a reflection question, so you can think about it to yourself. How many of you would like to see your ministry grow? Not just numerically, although that would be great, but in health and in depth and in kingdom impact. How many of you would like to see more people discipled, more families strengthened, more people come to know Jesus? Now, the reality is in a room like this, it's probably everybody in this room. So let me ask a tougher question. How many of you have ever felt like your ministry has a ceiling, like there's a limit somewhere? You're working hard, you're faithful, but there's a limit that you can't quite seem to push past. Today I want to talk about that ceiling, and more specifically, I want to talk about one of the reasons that it exists. For many leaders, that ceiling is not a lack of vision or a lack of calling. It's often much more practical. Let me show you what I mean. A few years ago, I opened my calendar on a Monday morning and I just stared at it. Every square was filled. Meetings, deadlines, follow-ups, prep, conversations that needed wisdom, tasks that needed discernment. There wasn't a single inch of white space anywhere. And the worst part? Nothing on that calendar was superfluous. It was all important, all necessary, all connected to ministry. There was no obvious place to cut, no wasted time, no laziness, just a very full schedule doing meaningful work. I was relatively new to my role as executive assistant, and I remember thinking, maybe this is just what leadership looks like. But if I'm being honest, underneath that thought was another belief, one I hadn't realized I had absorbed, even considering the culture we live in. I realized that I had a very strong American dream, I'll sleep when I'm dead, mentality. I mean, shouldn't exhaustion be evidence of faithfulness? I mean, the work matters, the needs are real, and the mission is urgent. But here's the question that began to surface for me. What if constant exhaustion isn't a badge of honor? What if living at or beyond our limits isn't proof of devotion, but a sign that something is out of order? And I realized, if this is what ministry feels like at its current pace, how could we possibly sustain more? How could I possibly sustain more? And that realization forced me to reconsider not just my schedule and my calendar, but what faithful leadership actually requires. And that's where this conversation on margin begins. But before we dive into margin, I want to stop and look at something, because it's really difficult to talk about margin without also talking about administration. I mean, I even put it in my title. And I think sometimes there is a misunderstanding of what administration is. And for some, maybe misunderstanding is a little strong. Maybe it's just that it's so easy to forget. When you hear the word administration, you might think emails, spreadsheets, policies, calendars, and paperwork. Necessary things. Maybe uninspiring things. Possibly even irritating things. I mean, I get it. In church culture especially, administration can often feel like the opposite of ministry. Ministry is spiritual and administration is practical. Ministry is people-focused and administration is process-focused. Ministry showcases vision, while administration is all about the details. But I'd like to gently challenge that divide, because biblically, administration is not about paperwork, but about stewardship. At its core, administration is the intentional ordering of people, time, and resources so that the mission can flourish. Administration moves the mission forward. It is the structure that protects what matters most. In Genesis 1, we don't see a chaotic God creating randomly. We see a God of order. Light and dark separated, land and sea divided, seasons established. Order preceded flourishing. In Exodus 18, Moses is overwhelmed, leading, judging, solving every problem by himself. Jethro steps in and says, and I'm paraphrasing here, "What you're doing, this isn't good. You're going to wear yourself out. You're going to wear all these people out." The solution wasn't more prayer meetings. It wasn't more passion. It was structure, delegation, organization, administration. And in Acts chapter 6, when widows were being overlooked, the apostles didn't dismiss this as a logistical nuisance. No, they appointed leaders to ensure that the distribution was handled well so that the mission of the word could continue unhindered. In each of these examples, administration wasn't bureaucracy, it was protection. It protected people, it protected leaders, it protected the mission. So when we talk about margin and strategies and schedules and time management, this isn't corporate productivity language imported into the church. This is stewardship language. Administration is not about control, but about care. It cares for your future self. It cares for your families. It cares for your staff. It cares for the mission long after we're gone. It cares for the people you are called to shepherd. And here's the honest truth. When administration is weak, the most spiritual leader in the room will eventually feel overwhelmed. Passion cannot compensate for lack of structure forever. So if you've ever thought, oh, I'm just not wired that way, or it's not really ministry, I'd like to invite you to reconsider. Strong administration is not the enemy of spirit-led leadership. It's the support system that allows it to last. And that's why margin matters. Because when our calendars are maxed out, when every decision feels urgent, when there's no space between what we're carrying and what we can sustain, something is out of order. Healthy administration will always produce margin. So let's dive in and take a look at what margin actually is. Simply put, margin is the space between our load and our limits. If our load is approaching or exceeding our limits, that's when we will feel overwhelmed. And if we are consistently overwhelmed, that's when we'll experience things like burnout, health issues, problems in our families, problems in our marriages, and so many other things. Not only will we suffer, but so will the mission. Last year, for staff meeting, we read here at church at Cedar Valley the book H3 Leadership by Brad Lomenick. And in this book, he writes a chapter on how to create a habit of margin. And he divides margin into three components: stillness, Sabbath, and space. Now, it was just one chapter out of his entire book, so it just scratches the surface. But I was so intrigued that I took a much deeper dive that we're going to look at today. Now, this first component of stillness, Lomenick defined this as literal stillness, that in moments of not working, not moving, not problem solving, we're able to hear more effectively from God. And while there's truth in that, yeah?
What was the book called again?
H3 Leadership. And while there's truth in that, of course, I'm not convinced it's the whole truth. Because when I was reading through that section, God dropped Psalm 46:10 into my head, where he says, "Be still and know that I'm God." And my next thought was, well, I don't even know what that means. What does it mean to be still? And what does that have to do with leadership or margin? So I did what any curious person would do. I went digging. And I learned that the Hebrew word used here is Rapha. It's the same root that we see in Exodus when God reveals himself as the one who heals, Jehovah Rapha. But in Psalm 46:10, it means to relax, to let go, to cease, to be idle. If you notice, there is surrender language embedded into this. This isn't just physical stillness. This is release. To let go is to surrender. And that shifted something for me. Stillness isn't just about stepping away from work. It's about loosening your grip on the outcome. I realized that without completely understanding it, I had started doing this in my own work. That packed calendar I referenced at the beginning, there were weeks where I looked at that thing and I thought, there is no way I can effectively navigate this on my own. I mean, I think I'm pretty good, but I'm not that good. I realized I had two options: strive harder or surrender. So I began starting my weeks differently. Before diving into tasks and running off to meetings, I would start my week with a prayer like this: "Lord, you see everything on this calendar. You see every meeting, every deadline, every conversation. What I see is impossibility. If I'm going to be effective, I need you to direct my conversations, direct my focus, give me discernment for what actually deserves my attention. That practice changed how I worked because stillness, Rafa, created internal margin. Nothing disappeared from my calendar. The meetings were still there. The deadlines didn't move, unfortunately, but the striving softened. And I can tell you that the weeks I start that way are different. Those are the weeks that come Friday, I'm often already working on Monday's to-do list, trying to figure out how in the world did I get everything done? It wasn't because I hustled harder or worked longer hours, but because I wasn't gripping everything so tightly. Stillness didn't remove my load, it recalibrated my posture. And that posture creates margin long before the schedule actually changes. Now, the second component we're going to look at is Sabbath. Now, just a timeout here. There's so much that we could unpack here. Entire books have been written about the Sabbath. That's not my aim today. I'm not here to answer every theological question, nor am I qualified to do so. I simply want to look at one aspect. What does Sabbath have to do with margin? When I read through this section of Lomanick's book, my mind immediately went to Genesis chapter 2, the first time we are introduced to rest. And what we see in Scripture is that God rested after creation. And of course, I became curious again. How does the word rested compare to be still, and are we talking about the same kind of stopping? Many of you probably already know the answer to this. I did not. I had to go look it up. I learned that the Hebrew word used here is Shabbat. It means to cease, to stop, to put down, but it also carries this idea of delighting, even celebrating. If we look at the example in Genesis 2, God did not rest because he was exhausted. He rested because his work was complete. It was intentional. It was built into creation itself. So that means Sabbath isn't collapse, it's design. And here's why that matters for margin. Sabbath is scheduled margin. It's the intentional decision to stop producing, stop solving, stop responding, even when there's still work left to do. And that's the tension for leaders, isn't it? Because there's always more work to do. More emails, more pastoral needs, more conversations, more preparation. The work of ministry is never fully finished. So if we wait until the work is done to rest, we will never rest. Sabbath forces a different question. Not is the work done, but am I trusting God enough to stop? Sabbath builds margin not only in our calendar, but in our soul. It reminds us that we are finite. We are not God. We will probably never get to the point where he did, where we're resting because our work is done. Probably not this side of heaven. But being finite isn't a flaw, it's simply a part of being human. If margin is the space between our load and our limits, then Sabbath is the weekly practice of honoring those limits. It's built-in protection. And practically speaking, if we do not pre-decide when we will stop, we won't. The urgent will always win, the inbox will always refill, the needs will always resurface. So Sabbath becomes a rhythm that guards margin before a crisis forces it. And when that rhythm becomes consistent, Sabbath stops being accidental and starts being intentional. I think it's helpful to put these two Hebrew words side by side because they reveal something important about margin. On one hand, we have Shabbat that we just talked about and invites us to stop doing as an act of obedience and rhythm. It's scheduled, it's visible, it's practiced. It's the day you take off, it's the phone you turn to do not disturb, it's the meeting you decline. It's external margin. On the other hand, we have Rafa. It invites us to stop striving as an act of trust and release. It's spontaneous, it's relational, it's often invisible. It's the moment where you stop in the middle of chaos to remember who God is. It's the breath you take before you respond. It's the quiet surrender that says, Jesus, take the wheel. It's internal margin. And here's what I've noticed. Some leaders are better at Shabbat than Rafa. You can take a day off, you can block time, you can build sustainable systems, but internally, you're still carrying everything. You're replaying conversations, you're drafting emails in your head, you're managing outcomes long after the meeting ends. Your calendar might be empty, but your mind isn't. Other leaders are better at Rafa than Shabbat. You trust God deeply, you pray, you surrender outcomes, but your calendar has no guardrails. There's no protected rhythm, there's no structural stopping point. There, you rely on good intentions instead of predecisions. You feel spiritually anchored, but chronically overextended. Sustainable leadership requires both. Scheduled margin without surrender becomes legalistic. You take time off, but you don't actually rest. Surrender without structure becomes chaotic. You trust God, but you never build boundaries. Shabbat protects your time. Rafa protects your heart. What we see through each is that margin is both designed and surrendered, which brings me to another reflection question. Which one of these is weaker in your leadership right now? Think about that for a second. Do you need to build a rhythm of stopping, or do you need to loosen your grip in the middle of work? When these two begin to work together, scheduled stopping and surrendered striving, something shifts. Leadership becomes lighter, decisions become clearer, and that space between your load and your limits begins to widen. That's the margin we've been talking about. The last component we're going to look at today is space. It's literally in the definition that we've been talking about. That margin is the space between our load and our limits. This is the very pragmatic side of margin. And if I'm being honest, this is absolutely my comfort zone. This is where I like to live. Space is what remains after everything else has been accounted for. And this is where things get uncomfortable. Because most of us don't actually leave space, we fill it. If there's an open hour, we schedule something in it. If a meeting ends early, we check email. If a day looks light, we add to it. We will never drift toward margin. Left to our own devices, we will naturally drift toward full. Space is not what accidentally appears when things slow down. Because let's be honest, does ministry ever really slow down? Space is what you intentionally protect before things speed up. And this is where administration matters deeply, because space does not exist without structure. You cannot hope your way into margin. You have to design it. Design means deciding how much you can actually carry in a day, building transition time in between meetings, blocking preparation time before important conversations, leaving white space that is not immediately claimed by something productive. And I want to be very clear here. White space in your calendar is not laziness. I had to learn this myself. It is leadership maturity. That packed calendar I reference, I no longer organize my week like that. I don't put everything on my calendar. I don't pack my calendar out. Why? Because the world we live in, unpredictability is guaranteed. Crises happen. Needs emerge, conversations inevitably run long. Space is what absorbs the unexpected without pushing you past your limits. Without space, every interruption will feel like a threat, and every crisis has the potential to derail your entire week. With space, interruptions become manageable, and you have flexibility to manage the crisis and still have room left over. And here's where my world intersects yours very practically. Creating space requires organization. It requires structure. It requires intentionality. It requires looking at your week and asking questions like, how many meetings can I realistically lead well in one day? How much sermon prep time actually produces clarity? How much decision-making can I sustain before my judgment starts to decline? These might feel like unspiritual questions, but they are actually very wise ones. Space is the structural expression of respecting your limits. I have another slide there, sorry. And when that space is built into your work, something powerful happens. You stop living in reaction mode and you start leading proactively. You have room to think, room to discern, room to respond instead of just react. That is margin at work. So maybe you're sitting there thinking, this all sounds great. I have no idea how to create space. What do I do now? I'm so glad you asked. If administration is not a natural gift for you, and I get it, it's not for everybody, then your desire to create and protect margin will have to outweigh the time and energy it takes to build it, or it simply won't happen. Margin is spiritual in its origin, but it becomes visible in our day-to-day work. Strong administration protects the mission when we intentionally build structures that reduce chaos and preserve clarity. I have for you today 5 steps, 5 proven strategies that I have used very successfully to create margin in my own work. The 5 steps that we're going to look at today are awareness, allocation, simplification, protection, and systemization. Now, you might take a bit of a buffet approach to these steps, where you take a little bit from here, and a little bit from there, and a little bit from over there, and you would create margin that way. That would work. Ultimately, these steps are designed to work progressively, meaning each new step builds off of the previous. So if you want to completely overhaul the way you think about doing your work, you might consider doing that. But this is not a quick fix. This is not a 30-day or less fix. You would want to work on that over 6 to 12 months because you're forming new habits. Give yourself lots of grace to learn how to do things new. Okay, we're going to walk through how these actually work. The first step is awareness. You cannot protect what you have not measured. That's such an admin thing to say. So you're going to start with a time study, okay? And if half of you just broke out in hives, it's okay. Okay, deep breaths. This is a really important step. If we want to create a budget, we track our spending. If we want to create margin, we need to track our time. So what does that look like practically? You would take 1 to 2 weeks, no more than that, and you track everything. Every task, every meeting, every email, every interruption. Start time, stop time, and where in your work, the category of where this falls in your work. If you do this, it will either be incredibly shocking at how you are actually spending your time, or really great confirmation to what you already knew. I recently had one of my admins do this. I had her track everything in an Excel spreadsheet that I had created. She did a masterful job. And once we had the data, I built a pivot table to calculate the total percentage of time spent in each category. Don't get intimidated. You don't have to know anything about pivot tables because Microsoft embedded its AI right into Excel. You just click on Copilot and you type out what you want. Will you please calculate the total percentage of time spent in each category? It will build the pivot table for you. Yes. Okay, so then I took that pivot table and I graphed it in a pie chart, and it became immediately obvious where she was spending her time and whether or not it matched her priorities. If you report to a supervisor, I strongly encourage you to share these results with them. Invite them to speak into it. They may see misalignment you can't. A time study gives you clarity because it shows you where your margin is leaking. Before we step into step two, I want to pause because there's one extra thing I want to mention here. If you're a pastor or a director or you oversee ministry regardless of your title, this would be a really great spot to take a look at what is on your plate and identify the things that might go better if you just got out of the way. This is not about dumping your work onto someone else. This is about what are those things that there is someone else, support staff, a volunteer maybe, that would love nothing more than to do that thing for you. And they'd probably do it better and faster. I can't tell you how many things I or our executive pastor or executive director of finance have wrestled out of the hands of our lead pastor, and everybody's lives get instantly better, right? We all, including the church. It's better for the church. So obviously we can't delegate everything, but it's definitely worth the hard look, okay? Step two is allocation. Now that you understand how you are spending your time, now you get to decide how much time each responsibility deserves. Not how much time it's currently taking, how much time it should take. And then you build that into your week intentionally. As I said, I used to put everything on my calendar, meetings, tasks, deadlines, all of it. Now, I reserve my calendar for meetings only. That's all that makes it on there. And everything else is funneled through an organizational tool that I'll get to in a bit. But scheduling my week, designing my week, required more than choosing a tool. I had to think strategically. What needs to happen at the beginning of the week? What can wait until the end of the week? What doesn't matter when it gets done, as long as it gets done consistently? Then I can consider the rhythms of those around me. Our lead pastor doesn't get into the office until noon on Mondays. I'm typically in by 7:40, and my first meeting isn't until 9. I always walk in Monday morning with a clear plan of those items that need to be tackled first thing. Fridays look different. There are no pastors in the office, which means fewer interruptions. Who doesn't love that? Right? Those are the days that I schedule the tasks that require the most focus. Reports, metrics, statistics, things that require sustained mental energy. In other words, I don't just schedule tasks, I schedule them where they make the most sense. Because creating margin isn't just about leaving space, it's about placing the right work in the right space. All right, third step, you guys still with me? Okay. The third step is simplification. Even with a strong schedule, your brain will still feel overloaded if every task requires fresh decisions. Mm-hmm. Often, the mental load of everything that we are carrying will feel heavier than the time it actually takes to complete it. That's because decision-making is exhausting. Standardization may sound like a big, scary corporate word, but it simply means doing the same task the same way every time. When you standardize, you remove unnecessary decisions. And when you remove unnecessary decisions, you create margin in your mind. Here's a very simple example. I standardized how my admin team creates registration forms. We have a consistent naming convention. We have updating contact information procedures. We have strict guidelines for how we handle online payments, as well as some several other things. And everything is documented in a step-by-step procedure. Why? Because when the decisions have already been made, the mental load decreases. When my admin team creates a new registration form, they spend very little time on those standardized items because the decisions have already been made for them. Then they spend the most of their time on what makes that form unique, whether it's for kids, youth, seniors, doesn't matter. That is where the value of their time truly lies. So this brings me to another reflection question. One second, one other slide. Standardization doesn't make us rigid, it makes us clear. Okay, now the reflection question. Think about your own responsibilities. Where could you standardize in your own work? Now, I'm not a pastor, but I watch pastors on Sundays. Conversation after conversation, prayer requests, follow-ups, quick updates, emotional moments, interruptions layered on interruptions. How do you capture what matters? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about having a pre-decided, standardized process to handle everything that gets thrown at you on a Sunday morning? Maybe you open a note in your phone the moment you arrive Sunday morning and you take notes in real time. I do a version of this. I don't have near as many conversations or interruptions, but I always pull up my phone and I send myself an email. That way I don't have to think about it because it's in my inbox and I can deal with it Monday morning. Yep. But maybe you don't want to be tied to your phone all day. I get that. So maybe you wait until the end of service or your last service and you sit down somewhere quiet and you do a 10 to 15 minute focused brain dump. The method actually matters less than the consistency. If you have a pre-decided process, you will get the noise out of your head and documented until you can actually deal with it. Standardization reduces decision fatigue. It removes mental clutter, so your time and energy is reserved for the people and problems that require your discernment. Now, our fourth step is protection. Now that you've clarified your work and simplified your process, now you need to protect your focus. When I have a major project, I use a time management strategy called time blocking. It is my favorite out of all the time management strategies that I've researched. I literally schedule a meeting with myself, I block the time on my calendar, and I work on that one thing and one thing only during that time. Personally, I never block more than 90 minutes. I know my attention span, and after that, my effectiveness really starts to drop. I need to get up, move around, move on to something else. And don't be afraid to draw strong boundaries around this time. If we were to walk up to a construction zone, there'd be yellow caution tape. We know what that means. Boundaries communicate something without you having to say a word. Here's a practical example. I work with my office door open about 95% of the time. It communicates accessibility. It also helps me mentally process interruptions because I've already decided I'm interruptible. And there are a lot of interruptions. Half of them are for me, half of them are for the lead pastor, half of them are the lead pastor. The math doesn't work, but you get the point.
Say that again.
Maybe that's your reality too. But when I'm time blocking, I close my office door and people respect it. You teach people how to treat your time.
Yes. Yes.
Here's a pastoral example, and I have permission to share this one. Not quite a year ago, our lead pastor decided that he wasn't going to come into the office on Mondays until noon. Monday mornings, he works remote. He's available if we need him in the event of an emergency, but that time is protected. He's only focused on writing sermons. It took people a while to adjust. We had to move staff prayer, sermon prep, pastor's meeting, which meant multiple other team meetings had to move for about 3 weeks. It was an absolute logistical nightmare. It took multiple revisions before we found a cadence that worked. And every time we moved one thing over here, I had to move five things over there. I will never get those 3 weeks back. But you know what? It was worth it. It was absolutely worth it. What I have seen as a result, Pastor Neil's shoulders aren't up by his ears anymore. He's more relaxed, more focused. He has greater capacity for back-to-back-to-back meetings in the afternoons. And if you're to ask him, he'll tell you that he is consistently 6 to 7 sermons fully written out ahead. 6 to 7 weeks ahead. That's something.
Yeah, it is.
Protecting margin isn't selfish. It's strategic. And when leadership models it, culture adjusts. Time blocking protects your focus so that you can lead well in the moment. But the mission of the church isn't built in moments. It's built over years. If your systems don't sustain you long term, you will slowly leak energy in ways that you can't see. Which brings us to our final step, systemization. Everything we've talked about will fall apart if your information lives in 5 different places. Organize your tasks one way and one way only. There are so many different tools that you can choose from, right? Pick one, commit to it, stay with it. There isn't a universally right or wrong choice here. You need to pick the tool that works for you. And once you've chosen your tool, you run everything through it. And when I say everything, I mean everything. Everything. Our director of production, he uses Microsoft Planner. It works beautifully for him. It would never work for me. If you're not particularly administratively minded, you might consider a third-party option like Monday or ClickUp. They're both free. They both have Microsoft and Google integration capabilities, as well as auto task generation options. Might be worth investigating. Me? I live and die by my Outlook task list, probably literally. What I love about the task list in Outlook is that recurring tasks only need to be built once. Mm-hmm. Weekly, monthly, bi-monthly, annually. I have annual tasks that only pop up once a year. They only need to be created one time, and then you never spend mental energy thinking about them again until they pop up. The key in Outlook, and I don't know Monday or ClickUp, but in Outlook, the key is to select no end date. It's not the default, so you have to choose it. That means when that task disappears, it only disappears because I intentionally removed it. Okay, and yes, I prefer classic Outlook over the newer version. I do not think that that was an upgrade. Sorry, Microsoft. Because when I flag an email that I need the information in, but I don't need it today, I need it 3 weeks from now, that email, that flagged email in classic Outlook, it doesn't happen in the newer version, it rolls directly into my task list right alongside my recurring items. That integration matters to me because it's all in one place. And here's why I strongly recommend using one tool. Because the reality is, for many of us, we wear multiple hats, some more than others, right? I support multiple executives. I don't have a list of information over here for our lead pastor and a list of information over there for our executive pastor. And I never get anything done. I'd spend all my time trying to figure out where my information lives and did I leave it where I thought I did. By funneling everything through one tool, you're not just organizing tasks, you're building a system. And strong systems protect your margin. Here's an example of how I've used this well. Every 2 months, create pod schedule, pastor on duty, pops up on my task list. If it wasn't on my task list, it would never get done. I don't do the work, I just create the schedule. It pops up and I go, oh yeah, that's right, I do that. Okay, some months. That sounds a little more like, oh, right, I do that. Okay. Pastors are busy people. It is hard to create that schedule sometimes. But having it live on my task list ensures that it gets done and we're never without coverage. We always have a pastor that is the go-to person. And also, it is highly respectful of my pastors that I get this done when it's supposed to get done, so they're not scrambling at the last minute to reorganize their calendars. That would be so frustrating for me if I was on the receiving end of that. But because it lives on my task list, the only mental energy I ever spend on it is the 20 to 30 minutes it takes every other month to evaluate the calendar, schedule everything out, and email out the communication. I never, ever spend energy trying to remember not to forget it. Systems create margin and sustainability, not because they make you robotic, but because they free your mind for what actually matters. They ensure critical responsibilities don't depend on your memory or your mood. They run whether you feel on top of things or not. That create pod schedule task, I built that 3.5 years ago, and it still runs like clockwork. Before I close, I want to share a few resources. These have shaped my thinking and strengthened my practice. These are tools that have helped me build margin externally, internally, and structurally. The first is The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. This book was incredibly helpful in building what I would call external margin. Slowing the pace of life, examining hurry, and confronting the cultural pressure to move faster than your soul can sustain. This number two is actually two books, Boundaries and Boundaries for Leaders by Mark Townsend and Henry Cloud. Sometimes creating margin means being able to say no. And for many of us in ministry, that can be very uncomfortable, okay? These books will teach you to say no clearly, confidently, and in a way that honors both God and the people you serve. Number three is The Emotionally Healthy Leader by Peter Scazzaro. His core message is that your leadership will never outpace the health of your inner life. And one of the clearest indicators of that health is whether or not you have margin. He gets to the root of why so many of us struggle here, not just poor systems, but internal drivers like overcommitment, fear of letting people down, the inability to say no. There's a pattern there. I stumbled across his podcast a few years ago by the same name, and number four is an episode of that podcast I'm highlighting about avoiding the traps that steal our margin. It's definitely worth a listen. And finally, I have a practical resource. I've created a time study template. It's an Excel spreadsheet that walks you through tracking and categorizing your time. There are reflection questions for you to answer at the end. I found those reflection questions to be particularly helpful when my admin did this because she identified some pain points, some areas where she was spending a lot of time and she was very frustrated by that. And so we were able to sit down and strategically think about how to mitigate that. If this tool would at all be helpful to you, I've got a clipboard at the back. Some of you may have signed in at the beginning, but leave me your name and your email and I'd be happy to share it with you. Also, if you want my slide deck, same thing, leave me name and email on the clipboard. I have far too many slides to send them out or to do a handout. So I'd be happy to send you a PDF of the slides. Okay, let me bring us back to where we started. At the beginning, I asked how many of you wanted to see your ministry grow. How many of you would like to have greater kingdom impact and to see more people come to know Jesus? And the reality is, in a conference like this, it's probably everybody here. But for many leaders, they eventually run into a ceiling. Not because the vision is wrong, not because the calling isn't real, not because the mission isn't urgent. Often, the ceiling appears when the weight of ministry grows faster than the structures that support it. A few years ago, I stared at a packed calendar and assumed I was doing leadership right. But now, when I look at a calendar like that, I don't feel pride, I feel caution. Because constant exhaustion isn't a virtue to be celebrated, it's a warning light.
That's right.
And warning lights are gifts. They tell us something needs attention before it breaks. Margin is not about doing less ministry. It's about doing ministry in a way that honors our limits. When we refuse to acknowledge our limits, we're quietly assuming we're indispensable. But faithful leadership understands something different. We are called to be faithful, not frantic, available, not overloaded, steady, not constantly stretched beyond capacity. And we see Jesus model this in the New Testament over and over again. He was faithful, available, and steady. Margin makes that possible. Margin gives you space to think before you respond, space to pray before you decide, space to rest without guilt, and space to lead from clarity instead of survival. And when margin is protected through stillness, through Sabbath, and through design space with strong administration, you begin removing some of those hidden ceilings that limit what your ministry can sustain. Strong administration doesn't replace ministry. It makes more ministry possible. And here's the great news. Margin isn't built in leaps and bounds. It's built in inches. So start small. One area where you create space. One process you standardize, one system that removes unnecessary mental load. Over time, those small decisions will widen the space between your load and your limits. And that space is where sustainable leadership lives. So when you open your calendar on Monday morning and you see what's there, don't ask, how can I fit more in? Ask a different question. Where is the space. Because in that space, you may just find clarity, health, and the kind of leadership that lasts. And with that, I love to open this up for questions. What's resonating? What feels challenging? Where are you struggling with this in real time? Quiet. Oh, yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
This yeah.
Really fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I'm just wondering, there feels like a little bit of, I'm welcome from different churches, so it's hard, so many different personalities in there.
Mm-hmm.
But this feels like something that I would really need to implement from the bottom.
Okay.
So that my leadership would be, you know, immediately recognize the need for all of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have a good strategy on how to fight through resistance that's there from.
Oh, yeah. That's a great question. Did everybody hear that about how to maybe implement this from the bottom up and mitigate resistance that you may be facing? Man, I don't know if I have an answer off the top of my head, but if I think really quickly, part of me feels like you have to like leak the vision a little bit. Start talking about it over time. Slowly, don't just completely overhaul, but if you do just a little bit at a time and continue to work on building culture, right? This is embedded into culture, like the way you think about how you do your work, how you do ministry, how you structure it. And slowly over time, you could probably think about turning a big ship, right? It's not going to flip really fast. That's a great question. Yeah.
The question I was trying to find when you were kind of talking a little bit about calendar, I might have mentioned time blocking.
Mm-hmm.
You talked a lot about defining your tasks and putting them in. Can you talk any more about time blocking, if you recommend it or don't? Because a lot of times, it's like, that's almost how my calendar gets the most full. I'm like, well, this would be a great chunk for this. And then, like, the odds of me doing that are so slim. Tana knows we talk about this all the time.
Okay, yes, absolutely. That's a great question on whether how much to use time blocking, and does that create the same problem that I started with that my calendar was packed. I typically reserve time blocking for two things. One, big projects. If I, as the executive assistant and we roll something new out across all staff, we have to create a template or whatever, I often am the one that is working on it. So if it's a new project, a big project, I will typically block time. And for stuff like that, I won't do it more than once a week, because I have all my other stuff I have to do. The other time that I will use time blocking sometimes is one of my larger roles. I oversee all the events that happen at Cedar Valley that are not Cedar Valley Ministry, so like EQIP. I work with the district on this. And so sometimes, because there's so much and there's so many details, I will time block for that. Again, I probably won't do it more than once a week.
And the other ways that you just kind of get to your task.
Yep. And a lot of that has to do with how I've strategically organized my week. Like, I have very specific tasks that pop up weekly on Monday versus Tuesday versus Wednesday. And there are things where it's like, I don't have time to do this today. Thank you. And so I might push it back to Thursday, or I might push it back to Friday. Friday is a great catch-up day with fewer people in the office. All right, we got 5 minutes left. Because I'm only doing it for certain things, and I still have all my other work I have to do. Okay. So again, if I time block everything, then I'm just packing my calendar out. And so that I have found that doesn't really work for me, but that doesn't mean my way is the only way. I mean, that may work for you. You could give it a shot, see what you think. Try it for a month. All right. Thanks for coming, everybody.